Hey, what is going on, everyone? It's me, Mr. Mario, and welcome back to another episode of Mario's Minute. For those who do not know, this is a podcast I do here in two different forms. First of all, it is available in a video visual form on the Mr. Mario 2011 YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey channels. It is also available in a audio-only form, so you can take it around and listen to it wherever the hell you want to, like an actual podcast. Simply look up Mario's Minute on your favorite podcasting app, host, site, or provider, and you should hopefully be able to find it. I know it's not available on all of them, but it's available on most of them. Now, this is the second podcast that I do. My main one, Mod Chat, it's a lot more structured. It's more focused on video game console modding, video game modding, things that are new in that world that I find interesting, news updates, all that fun stuff. This here, sometimes I have a guest on here, sometimes I don't. I try and alternate between month to month on that. This is a solo episode, but I really just come on here and talk about whatever the hell I want to. It's fun. It's kind of therapeutic to do. Cool opportunity to connect with the masses here as well. And, you know, even though it doesn't get a ton of viewership, I've never wanted it to do that. I just want to, you know, have something a little bit personal out there. And the people who seem to listen to it and enjoy it really seem to listen to it and enjoy it. So thank you very much if you're listening or watching along with this. Either way, I do have a whole bunch of random topics here I want to talk about. Are we going to get to all of them? Absolutely not. But are we going to get to some of them? For sure. And the first one here is actually going to be about the PS1 game Jet Moto 2 and YouTube, of all things. So for anybody who does not know, I need to give a little bit of background here. Jet Moto is a series on the original PlayStation, and I think it even died on the original PlayStation, unfortunately. It had several entries, but one of them, Jet Moto 2, actually ended up having two releases of it. So there was a story which was originally told to me, I think here on the podcast, by Jason of Game Rave TV. Big shout out to him. Really awesome dude. He was a guest on here for a previous episode. But in short, there were two versions of it that had to come out, and the second one really wasn't supposed to come out. Now, I did end up telling this story in a TikTok or YouTube short when I was, you know, making a few of those, and I need to make some more of them. They were fun to make. But what I'm going to do, as opposed to, like, really just dragging this out and retelling the whole story, I'm actually just going to drop in the audio here real quick from my short that I made so you all can get caught up to speed and know exactly what's going on here.
Would you believe me if I told you these are not the same game? This is Jet Moto 2. This is actually Jet Moto 2 Championship Edition, a remaster of sorts for the original PlayStation. The story goes, a new build of Jet Moto 2 called the Championship Edition was built with huge changes like removing 6 competitors per race to boost the game's performance and having all tracks from the original Jet Moto unlocked at the beginning. When the time came for a Greatest Hits release, Sony asked the game's producer, Brian Wilkham, to send over a new master disc for pressing. He sent over the Championship Edition and asked for this to be the Greatest Hits release. As this was a whole different version of the game, Sony refused and requested the original Jet Moto 2 to be sent over, which ended up happening. Due to some kind of mix-up over at Sony Digital Audio Disc Corporation, Championship Edition was accidentally used as the new Master Disc. Upon investigating this and asking Brian about it, he famously told the powers that be that he did send the right disc, it was properly labeled, and it's not my fault that DADC couldn't read.
Awesome. So now that we're on the same page and you're all up to speed, imagine my surprise when there was one day I was checking my comments, because I'm one of those people, I do check my comments. I even check the held for review and I respond and interact with comments on here. I still pride myself on doing that, but I have a screenshot that I'm just going to read off, and you know, I'll go ahead and yeah, I can go ahead and say the screen names because, you know, it's public and it's nothing bad here. But there was a comment from Spiritual Ed on that YouTube upload who said, getting salty with Sony, damn Brian. To which Brian, or I guess a user who said they were Brian, said, damn right. Not heads up, I am going to be cussing a little bit here. I don't cuss all too much on my videos, but just a content warning here. He said, damn right, not my fault those fuckers couldn't read. I did send the right one. SCE was pissed. However, Kelly Flock and I were laughing and happy about it. Now, when I saw that, I was like, is this really Brian? Or is this someone who's kind of cosplaying as them? To which, you know, I looked into their account, I looked to see what they have linked, and sure enough, it was him. To which I replied, I said, certainly wasn't expecting this, thanks for stopping by, Brian. And he replied back and said, I certainly wasn't expecting me to be cruising YouTube at midnight looking for Jet Moto 2 CE videos. Saw yours and laughed because, yep, that's how it happened. Just did a Facebook post today and linked your video. So just something that I wasn't expecting at all. And it's one of those things, I will say, out of all the years of doing YouTube, sometimes, you know, certain things, shout outs and all that, you can get a little jaded by. And there's all these things that I can go into. I guess in short, I'm trying to sound, I don't want to sound too big headed about this, right? But for the most part, it's kind of one of those things. There's some people, they just want to get like shouted out by bigger YouTubers than them and what have you on there. I kind of just want to treat everyone equally for the most part. And, you know, we're all on the same platform. It's always been a thing for me. If it's someone who I really enjoy their content and I even look up to them, whether they are bigger than me or smaller than me, if I do get a, you know, a shout out of some kind by them, I appreciate that. And I get a little giddy and excited. However, this has never really been my speed. If it's just someone who they have a million subscribers and like they're just like, oh yeah, shout out to Mr. Mario, he's an awesome dude. If I don't know them, and especially if I don't like their content, I'm just like, who are you? Like, I don't. Oh, you do prank videos in the hood or something? Like, I'm not gonna respect that, man. I don't want your shout out. I would have rather you stayed silent and did nothing. So that's kind of how I move, at least. And the reason why I guess I kind of had that tangent there is to get into this and say, like, there's still some things that do excite me on here with interactions. And one of them that never gets old is when there is a developer behind one of the things that I am covering, whether it's in a tutorial or a news update or what have you, and they end up seeing my video and they give props in some way. Because to me, I'm just like, you know, that is the ultimate thing when a developer behind a piece of homebrew or a tool or software ends up seeing my video and they just say, hey, this is awesome. Good job. That never gets old, admittedly. So I was certainly not expecting Brian, of all people here, the person I was making that video on, to comment, to see that video. But sure enough, it happened. So super cool to see overall. Another thing here, this is not YouTube related, but we're going to be going off that. We're actually going to be going offline and IRL for this one here. Thermal paste, companies, cooling. I've personally been using MX4 branded thermal paste. Yeah, I think it's MX4 from Arctic. That's it. That's the company. It's the brand is Arctic, and the type of thermal paste I've been using is MX4. And recently, I had ended up doing a video where, well, not a video, excuse me, I ended up doing a install for a friend of mine. It was actually one of my best friends who I've known for a while. And funny enough, this dude pretty much got me into the Xbox 360 side of modding, crazy enough. And really, like, I talked to him about this recently. He doesn't realize how much he really kicked off here. I think I would have eventually gotten to it, but he ended up selling me my first modified Xbox 360. And, you know, it was all, I was already cognizant of the 360 modding world, but that was the first time I was able to delve in because I had modified hardware at that point. And that was damn near 12 years ago at this point. But either way, you know, we got into contact a few years ago, and I'd say he's definitely one of my best friends. And, man, I got to put this dude on blast a little bit, right? Hey, man, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but I got to put you on blast here. I remember at the time he had sold me this flash system, and he had another system that was on a low dashboard, and he was going to be J-tagging it. And I remember at the time, this is 2011, mind you, I was jealous because I was like, oh, man, J-tags are awesome. And J-tags, it's just having a hard modded 360, which means that you can run unsigned codes. You can run modded games. You can install your games to the hard drive and you don't have to have a disc in there. You can do the same with DLC, with Xbox Live Arcade games, with Xbox Live indie games. Just have everything digitally there. You don't have to have the DRM on it. You can mod the games as well, too. This is before stealth servers were a thing, so you couldn't get online at that time. But I never cared about that. I just thought it was super cool that you could have all your content on an internal or external drive, and you could have homebrew access and game mods and all that fun stuff. I always thought that was so cool. So he ended up at one point, he had a system, and his mom, of all people, ended up doing the soldering on it because apparently she has gotten excellent at solder work. So he ended up doing the software side. She ended up doing the hardware side of it, and apparently he set it up, and the sad thing is he didn't really use it all that much. From what I know, he kept it in his living room, and at one point his house was broken into, and they stole a 360 that was out in the living room, and he never had a hard modded 360 after that. So all these years later, he was wanting a Corona, like a Halo 4 Corona RGH system. And it was something we've been talking about for years, but we finally had it come to fruition. He ended up getting a hold of a Halo 4 system. It was in great condition for the most part, kind of dirty, but we worked on getting this up and running, and I was able to modify it for him. So it was cool to kind of, you know, give back to the person that kind of got me into this and had me, you know, as the old thing said, I'm blanking on the word, but I guess the 360, the tagline was jump in. So he was able to help me jump in. I was able to help him jump in. The reason why I was saying I was putting him on blast is because when we were doing this, I showed him, you know, I modded up his system. I did RGH3 on there, and I showed him a custom dashboard, and he was super wowed. And I'm like, didn't you see this before? He said, no. And I'm like, well, what? Like, back in the day, you had, what, XCX menu? Nope. Freestyle dash? Nope. And I'm like, you had a JTAG, though. That's what I don't get. Like, you would, surely you would have seen some of this stuff. He's like, no, I never did any of this. And I'm like, so hold on. I have to ask. You had a JTAG like 12 years ago. What did you do on it? And he said, I just played burned games. And I'm just like, it just shattered this illusion. It was hilarious to me, but just so disappointed at the same time. I'm just like, are you kidding me? You had a JTAG. You had a hard modded system when everybody was wanting them way back when. Like now anybody could have one, but back then they were super rare, super hard to get a hold of, expensive. And I'm just like, you had this and you never ran a single piece of homebrew on it? All you used it as a flash DVD drive system? That's all you did? And he's like, yeah, that's all I did. And I'm like, okay, we're going to fix that. Okay, I died. Okay. So I had to put him on blast a little bit there. But either way, what ended up happening was, you know, he brought over the system. He also brought over his own thermal paste and thermal paste remover because he was saying, hey, I know how expensive this stuff is. And I'm like, dude, don't worry about it. You know, it's just a glob on it. It's fine. So we end up taking apart the whole system, and thankfully, because he had worked on so many, I was like, you're going to be helping me with this. So I did like the soldering work and the programming and such, but he ended up, you know, I took the system apart, yeah, he helped me clean it up and all that stuff. And when it came to removing the thermal paste, he was like, oh, okay, give it to me. So I gave him the motherboard, and he ended up trying this Arctic branded stuff called MX Cleaner. And I'm going to tell you all this, do not ever buy this. Don't ever buy this junk. Don't ever buy this. Don't ever, 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 ever buy this, okay? If you need to remove thermal paste, you buy Arctic Clean. You buy isopropyl alcohol. You get yourself some paper towels. But don't ever buy the MX Cleaner, because I'm about to tell you why. It is just, it's a wet wipe, essentially. That's all it is. And it comes in a pouch. He ripped this pouch open. He took out the wet wipe. And you just take the wet wipe, and you just start cleaning the surface. He was able to clean the XC GPU really well on the Xbox 360. He cleaned up the heatsink. He was able to, you know, remove all the thermal paste just fine. It worked beautifully, and you don't need a bunch of wipes. You only need one wipe for this, right? You only need one wipe. The reason why I'm saying do not ever buy this, and I cannot recommend it in any way, shape, or form, is because this thing stank. We immediately caught a whiff, and I was like, oh, wow, that is a little strong. That is a little pungent. But the problem is that it lingers. And it lingers like no other. Like, this was kind of, it had taken us a while because we worked on this, you know, for several hours. And then we were hanging out and like we went out for a bit and we came back. But at one point, there was some stuff that he was working on with the system. And I went to walk my dog. And it's one of those situations, you know, when you're used to a smell, so you don't really smell it or it doesn't bug you that much. And then when you leave for like 20 minutes or if you leave for a day and you come back, it hits you. That's what happened. I went to walk my dog. I was gone for like 20 minutes. Come back. I open the door. This is on the second floor, right? On the first floor, I enter. And this whiff just hits me. It slaps me across the face. It was like walking into a skunk's bottom. It was disgusting. this one wipe, this one little bitty wipe. And it wasn't even like, you know, like a wipe that you would use for your butt. Like it was like a fifth of the size of one of those. One wipe was doing this, right? Everything stank. Even at one point, Lily was hanging out in the office here. We were working on this, and after like 10 minutes, she ended up leaving, and she would not come back into the office because her poor nostrils. So, you know, we had this in the garbage, and it was like later on that evening after he left, it was so bad, I took the garbage, because I had like a little tiny garbage can. I took the garbage, I took the bag, I bagged it up, I put it outside in like the big trash, you know? And it lingered so bad, you all. It was so bad. I went to sleep that evening. I woke up at like 3 a.m. and I thought a skunk had sprayed right outside my window. And I'm like, that is, because it happens sometimes. Like occasionally, like in my neighborhood, there's a skunk that sprays. Occasionally it happens. So what happened was, I'm just like, what the hell? This is more powerful than usual. Was it like right outside my window or something? Like what happened? So I go to like check what was going on. I open up my bedroom door. The smell slaps me again. I realize, wait a minute. The smell was so bad because it evolved. It wasn't even like it lingered. It lingered and it evolved. It was so bad, mind you. You all got to realize this was in the trash for a few hours, but I had emptied the trash and like 8 hours later, the smell had lingered and it got worse. And then, because it was pretty cool at that point, but like the next day it was hotter. And then the next day, I have central air here. The AC kicked on and it blew this skunk smell around everywhere. So we didn't even go into the basement really, but I was in my basement. I'm relaxing there and I'm like, I smell it. I smell it there. I smell this. It's powerful. And I text him. I'm just like, I love you, but damn it, man. You made everything stink. And he felt so bad about it. He even told me, he said, you know, when I got home, I just wanted to like see, like make sure that I wasn't just imagining things, that like it really was that bad. And he said, nope. When he went home, he took another one of the wipes. He opened it up and he's like, oh God, that was definitely as bad as I remember. But it stinks up everything. It took me probably 3 days to really fully get that smell out of here. It was disgusting. And this is just from one wipe, you all. One wipe. So I'm telling you all, don't ever use MX Cleaner. Do not ever use it. Ever. Just learn from our mistake. I'm happy I didn't spend money on it, but damn it. Like, dude, I'm not going to say your name, man, but I love you, but you came over, you made everything smell. It's fine, though. It's fine. After a bit, took like 2 or 3 days to fully get it out of here, but we got everything aired out. It's all good. I think we're okay on that. I did want to talk about, you know, another YouTube comment. This one, it's not going to be as wholesome, mind you, but this is something that has accidentally spawned a little bit of memes in the community. I'm not sure. Occasionally, because I share this around, this is not old. This has been a few months ago. I have friends. I have even people like in our Discord. Occasionally, they just reference this. They just bring it up. I want to talk to you all about industrial style soldering irons. Now, as some people might know, I do a few videos, I do a few tutorials here, and I've gotten a lot more into hardware tutorials the last few years. I'm happy because for the most part, for years, I was afraid of soldering, and now I'd say I'm decent at it, decent to good. I'm not a professional, but I'm decent or good at it, I would say. However, one thing that I've tried to make a conscious decision to do is years ago, I used to say, oh, this is easy, this is easy, this is difficult. But I've stopped assigning difficulty to projects and videos that I show because I realize that everybody has different levels of experience. And what's easy to me might be super difficult to someone else. What's super difficult to someone else might be easy for me. Again, what might be super difficult for me is going to be, you know, medium difficulty for someone else. So because of that, like at one point, I think I have some old like PS1 mod chip install videos. I said in some of those that they were easy, and there was a lot of people that said, no, they're not easy. And as someone who I wrecked a few PS1s when I was learning how, I get it. I understand. I'm not going to debate that. So that's why now I do try to show everything as clean and clear as possible. And I even do recommend, like, hey, just watch the video. And there are sometimes I say, like, hey, I don't recommend this to a beginner. I know, kind of jumping into another thing here, but I know with one RGH video I did, it was the Trinity RGH 3.0 video. For anybody who does not know, RGH for the Xbox 360, it allows you to modify the system, hard mod it to run homebrew and all that fun stuff on there, just unsigned code. It's awesome. RGH3 is great because it's really only two wires and a resistor. You don't have to worry about a glitch chip, and it's super awesome for the most part. However, there is one point on there that you have to scrape the motherboard on, and it is super small. Even I have difficulty seeing it with my own naked eyes. I have to use a microscope for it, and with a microscope, I can get it done. But, you know, for the most part, like, it's going to really screw with some people. And there's a lot of people who they do get confident and they do it and they're like, oh yeah, that's super easy. And I just say, I'm like, it's not easy to a lot of people. It's not easy to most people. Like, it's easy for you, but it's not easy for most people. And even that person who might say it's easy, I'm like, you know, you were the one who was terrified of this just 3 hours ago. So, you know, now you can understand why someone would be terrified of this. There's some people that they say, oh, I don't know how soldering is so hard. You're just melting, you're just melting a solid piece onto another piece. And I'm like, for me, soldering was very difficult. Like, people might expect me to say that soldering is easy. I'm going to acknowledge, I mean, it might be easy once you have enough experience and time and practice with it. But when I was first learning, I was breaking a lot of stuff. It wasn't easy for me to learn. There's still times I get challenged by it. Point is on there, with the old RGH3 thing, I was bringing up the Trinity video because at one point, there's comments I get sometimes like this. And I will say, my videos probably do make it look a little bit easy because I have everything zoomed in, especially with the microscope. I have everything clear right there. I have it blown up on screen. You're able to clearly see what's happening there. And then when I'm doing it, again, I'm not a professional, but I have enough years of experience at this point where, you know, scraping a little point and then tacking a wire to it, I can probably make it look easy on video, admittedly. I'm not going to say it's easy, but I can make it look easy on there. It's kind of a perception thing. So there was one person I remember at one point, they said something like, wow, you know, that's it. You know, I've never ever soldered before, but this actually looks super easy. Ha ha. I think I'm going to try it out myself. And to those people, I typically tell them, if you've never soldered before, I do not recommend this mod. It looks easy because I'm showing everything up close, personal, blown up, and I have experience doing stuff like this. But when you do it, you don't know how to use the tools. You don't know how to, you know, properly apply everything because this is brand new to you. And when you're doing all of this, you also don't know how small it is until you actually get there. So if you have never ever soldered, no, I don't recommend you follow this video for your first time soldering. I really don't. There are people, though, who do end up doing that. They actually report back. They say, hey, I've never soldered before, and I decide to give this a shot, and it works. And to them, you know, congratulations, that's awesome. But do I recommend that? No. However, I end up getting kind of the opposite here, and a comment that didn't really make sense. And part of it is, I don't think they're trolling. I'm just looking at this here. I don't think they're trolling. I think it is someone who is either lying or they responded emotionally. They commented emotionally, I can say that. But they're either lying or they're not super proficient with their work here. So this was on a video where there was another mod that I had shown. It was Pico Boot for the GameCube. That, in short, allows you to take a Raspberry Pi Pico, you flash it with the Pico Boot firmware, and then that turns it into a IPL injection mod chip for the GameCube, which is better than something like a Xeno GC, because at this point you're actually modifying the system itself as opposed to just the DVD drive. So what I ended up doing was, one day I was looking at comments here, and I saw this one, and it just stuck out to me because of how ridiculous it was, I suppose. And I'm just going to read this verbatim. This person commented on the video at the time, and they said, in all caps, do not attempt this mod. Now, no more caps. I've repaired several consoles and installed hundreds of RGH chips. Mr. Mario acts like this is a simple install, but it's not going to be possible for you without an industrial-style soldering iron. Unless you want loose solder connecting several minuscule points and ruining your console, I wouldn't do this. Just lost my childhood GameCube to this tutorial. Now, I did reply to this, and I said here verbatim, an industrial-style soldering iron? What? This can be accomplished using a pretty standard soldering iron, a fine tip, and of course, good solder, wire, technique, etc. I also never assigned any difficulty to this install, as difficulty is subjective to every installer. Sorry to hear about your GameCube, but I'm unsure how this is a massive ramp up in difficulty compared to hundreds of glitch chips. I've performed several RGH install, and I'd easily say those would be just as difficult or even more difficult than installing Pico Boot. And here's the thing, you all might be wondering if there was a reply to this. There was not. In fact, this user ended up removing their comment. So it lives on in screenshots and I guess in this podcast now as well. However, one funny thing has come from that. There has been a meme in the Mr. Mario community, I suppose, of industrial style soldering irons. One of my best friends is just absolutely tickled by this and he just seems to reference it and laugh about it. But occasionally, if you see someone talking a little something about industrial-style soldering irons, you know what's up. It's something like this. I will say to that original comment, like I said, I don't think they're trolling. I think they did wreck their GameCube. I think they responded or commented emotionally there. But what I said was pretty spot on with that. I was like, this doesn't make sense to me here. Like, I don't know how you can tell me you have installed hundreds of glitch chips for the Xbox 360, but Pico Boot is what defeats you. That just doesn't make sense to me there, because if you've done hundreds of glitch chips for the 360, Pico Boot is easier, I would say, especially if you've done hundreds of chips. Unless all of your chip installs were just like barely hanging on to all of their points and were just barely working. That's the only thing I can really think of, because as fragile as a 360 is with, you know, all the Red Ring of Death issues and all that, when it comes to modding it, it's also a surprisingly robust system. Like, you can do a lot of stuff that you're not supposed to on that, like wire things up incorrectly, and things just work, or they don't work, and it's strange. It is strange, for sure. So, I did want to talk about this here, something a little bit personal, but this here, you know, it was a project that I had worked on, right? A little family thing, I guess you can say. So, when I was growing up, we ended up having a VHS-C camcorder. I realize there's probably people here who might be listening who've never worked with VHS. It was a analog video format. It wasn't great. It ended up losing the console war against Beta, of course, that many people know. And it wasn't because it was better. It was because more companies tacked onto it because it was cheaper. But point is, I was born into the VHS era. And my parents, very early on into my life, ended up purchasing a camcorder. Now, they ended up, really smart idea on their part, because we just have all of these videos and footage of, you know, people when they were young, people as they were evolving, growing up, especially a lot of footage, and you can see these people, you can hear them speak, footage of people who have departed, who are no longer with us anymore. So that was something really awesome that my family ended up doing. Definitely a big, it was looked at as an investment, a big investment, very expensive at the time, because when my family ended up buying their first camcorder, at the time they made sure that it could record in color, but it was also a little more expensive because the viewfinder was also in color. The very first one I think was purchased in, I don't remember when it was, it had to be the early 90s, but the point is, they were expensive at that point. It was definitely a squeeze to get, but props to them, they end up doing it. And because of this, I'm so happy that they did it, because we've had two camcorders overall. And now, you know, anything can just be recorded on a phone or, you know, even digital cameras aren't that much of a thing now. They're not nearly as popular, but DSLRs, you know, they do video. They do video great for the most part. That's what I record my videos on here. So what ended up happening was, I knew about these videos, quite literally grew up with VHS-C. We had done some transfers. Like, there were times when I was growing up, family members wanted copies of tapes. So we would do the thing where I end up taking the camcorder, I hook it up to power, I end up hooking it up to a, I hook it up to the video output, plug the video output into the input section of the TV, and then I put like a fat VHS tape, like a full form VHS tape, pop into the TV's VCR, record to that, you know, send the tape over to family members. So we've done stuff like that. And a few times I've also digitized some videos as well too. However, it was something where several years ago, I kind of started this project and I said, you know, it just, I don't feel comfortable. It doesn't sit right with me. And it disturbs me that we have all these invaluable tapes that we can never, ever replace. These are not commercial releases. These are home videos. We have all these tapes that we don't really know where they're at. We don't know what the contents are on them. We don't even have any way of playing them because I'm the tech nerd of the family. And I didn't even have a VCR at that point. I was like, guys, I don't have a VCR. If I can't watch a VHS tape, like, sure as hell no one else can watch a VHS tape in this family. So what happened was at one point when I was visiting my parents, I found a big box full of these little VHS tapes. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take this. I'm going to take all these tapes. We also had a VCR that was floating around. They had one because it was accompanied with this. I said, I'm going to take all the tapes. I'm going to take the VCR and I'm going to bring them back to my house. And they said, cool, you know, you do you. Awesome. And initially, I started a digitizing project for myself. Now, there's probably better ways of doing this, but this is how my setup was, right? Initially, I just took a, I ended up like using just my HDMI capture card and I did a composite to HDMI adapter, plugged the VCR's output into the adapter, plugged in the other end of the adapter to my capture card, and just hit record. And it was okay. It was just the videos were, the video files were pretty big. That was the thing. And also, you know, the capture software with that, it's more tailored towards video games and such. So I ended up digitizing like two tapes with that. And the problem is you got to realize when you're digitizing these tapes, you need to take the length of how long each tape is and probably multiply it by, I would say, 1.3, at least in my situation. Because you can't speed up a tape. Like, it's not like a DVD. You take a DVD, it doesn't matter if it's a five-hour movie. You take that DVD, you pop it in your disk drive, you copy the files over. It takes a few minutes to do so. Of course, you got to decrypt it and all that stuff, but mind you, it doesn't take that long to do it. You can have that thing ripped over, decrypted, backed up. You can make a copy of it, you can convert it, mind you, within a fraction of the time of the actual contents on there. A VHS tape, if the video is an hour and a half long, you're probably going to have to spend about 2 hours dedicated to that tape. So it was a very long project. It took a while, and this was taking me years to work on this, right? But what ended up happening was initially I did that, and I did like two videos that way, but then I ended up going to a thrift store at one point and I found a DVD recorder. And I'm not talking about a DVD burner. I'm talking about a DVD recorder. And this is what I want to talk about here as well, because, you know, I've been watching a few other channels that kind of just talk about like differences with media and such. Like, I love Technology Connections. I love Cathode Ray Dude, CRD. And they have videos where they talk about stuff like this. They talk about, you know, the different types of DVD formats, how DVD camcorders. I loved that one recently, like CRD's video on DVD camcorders. I actually had one. It was very spot on with what he was talking about there. However, DVD recorders were a thing that didn't really catch on. And I'm not talking about DVD burners. If you don't know what I'm talking about, a VCR. VCRs take VHS tapes, you pop them in, you play them, but you could also record. And you hook them up to a TV, typically. It was something you hook up to your TV or you hook up to your cable box. So that way, you're watching something on TV, you can hit record on a blank tape, and you could record from the TV to that tape in real time. DVD recorders were a thing that did happen. They were out there, and it was the exact same logic. You hook up this DVD recorder to your entertainment center. That way you can take a DVD movie, pop it in, you can play it. But if there's anything playing on TV, you could hit record and you can record in real time to that blank DVD. However, because of how it all worked, you could only play it back from that DVD recorder for the most part, Or if you wanted to play in any DVD player, you had to end up finalizing it. And that was just a situation of how the DVD format ends up working. So what ended up happening was, at one point I went to a thrift store and I ended up finding, I think I was inspired because I missed this just barely. There was a couple who was next to me and we were looking in the electronics section and they ended up finding a VHS DVD dual, like kind of like dual deck recorder. It had a VCR in there and it also had a DVD recorder. And I think the woman, she found it and she was telling her significant other like, oh yeah, you know, I found this and I'm going to get it. And it was only like 10 bucks or something. She's like, yeah, I'm going to get this. I'm going to, you know, be able to transfer over my VHS tapes. And I just thought to myself, I'm like, damn, I just missed out on that. That would have been a really good thing to have. So what ended up happening was I started looking around a little more. And I think within that same day, for a little bit more, I think it was like 14, 15 bucks or something, I ended up finding one. I found a DVD recorder and it had a built-in IDE drive. So I ended up buying it. I took it home. It worked. The internal DVD drive, well, the internal hard drive was full of like TV recordings and stuff. I ended up deleting all those. I never used the hard drive on there. But what I did was I took the VCR that I had. And also this DVD recorder had HDMI out. So I had this all set up in my office here, but I ended up plugging the HDMI into my capture card so I could see in real time what was going on, just to use it as a monitor. Then I hooked up the VCR. I would put my tapes in there. You had to have like a little adapter. So I'd like put the VHS-C tape into a VHS adapter, popped the tape in with the adapter into the VCR. I had the output hooked up to the DVD player's input, and I was using composite for that. And then I had HDMI out just so I could monitor it. But what would happen was I just did it old school. Like, I ended up hitting play on the VCR. I ended up hitting record on the DVD player. And in real time, it would transfer over to a DVD. When it was done, I would stop the recording. I would then finalize that DVD. Then I would take that DVD over to my computer and rip it over into ISO format. So at that point, I had it all ready to go. And from there, the reason why I was doing that is, I guess, for kind of twofold. One, I noticed, I guess it's kind of with the frame pacing on there. I guess that's how I can say. I noticed when I was capturing, just using straight up my capture card, I think it was something I easily could have tweaked, but I wasn't 100% sure of what I was doing on there, and it just didn't look super good. Like, the frame rate didn't look as good as it was supposed to. I think it was that, or it was either the, like the conversion, like the files I was making. But the point is, I noticed when I play back a video from the VHS tape, it looks as it should. When I record it to a DVD and play it back from the DVD, it looks as it should. So I said, you know what? This is going from one format to another. It's still physical, but it is being digitized in real time. Plus, I know how to, man, they are doing, I am so sorry about this. There is so much work that is happening outside right now, and it just started as I was deciding to record all this, but they are just really turning up out there. So if you're hearing this in the background, I apologize. I'm going to see if I can do anything about that. But either way, that's why I'm trying to talk a little bit louder as well. Either way, what ended up happening was I went through, like I said, I was able to do that. The DVDs, they looked fine. And I'm like, you know what? Even if DVD is a compressed format, it's a VHS tape. It's okay. I'm already working with some that's not really going to be the best. We were also the family. We recorded in SLP, so that stretched out the tape longer. And the quality looked fine for us back then, but we weren't trained in it. Nowadays, when I was looking at it all, like you're taking a low-resolution tape, you're blowing it up onto like a 1080p or 1440p display. It's interlaced and all that. It's like, okay, that doesn't really look that good. But the point is, it's still watchable, it's still viewable, and we can check it out. Plus, at that point, when I have the ISOs on hand, I can easily mount them, I can watch them. Windows allows you, at this point, you know, Windows 10, Windows 11, you can just natively mount them up. So the thing is, if there is ever any family members who want a physical copy of a DVD, because I do have, you know, older family members who still have a DVD player, and it's just easier for them to do that, I could just burn off those DVDs, you know, send them over. However, if people are wanting to watch them just, you know, as bare files, you can always mount that ISO, you can play back the VOB files, and of course you can convert those over as well too. But the point is, I have a sort of like master to work with. Plus, in the process, I never got rid of the physicals. I was very against that. I want to keep them all on hand. So I still have all my physical VHS tapes, but the intention was I'm not going to go back and rewatch them. I just want to play them one time each so I can digitize them. I have master copies of those, so to speak. So now I have physicals of them already made. Plus then I have them actually like digitally backed up, digitally preserved and uploaded and all that fun stuff. So that's how all that was going. So that worked for several of the tapes. I probably went through 30, 40 tapes that way. And at one point, I didn't have any more tapes to go through. And just for several years, I just told my family, hey, anytime you find a tape, bring it to me. And I don't care. I don't care if it's blank. I don't care if you don't know what's on it. If you find a tape, pack it up and give it to me. And over the years, like occasionally they'd find one or two tapes, they'd give them to me. But it got to the point I had maybe three or four tapes left to digitize. And also there was some tapes that I was looking for. Like, cause you know, there was a few that I remember growing up, but there was also some tapes I had told friends about. One of them was actually, one of my best friends. It was the first time we ever saw each other. We did not talk. We didn't know who each other were, but there was pretty much a music festival. Like, you know, when we did this thing in grade school, you know, we would all like go to places and like sing and all that and have these like events, I guess, performances, but we would do that. You know, parents would come in the evening, you know, we would practice for weeks in our music class and we would all be singing all these songs about certain themes and such. The point is at one point at the end of being in elementary school, we end up having something like that, except it wasn't just our school. It was all the elementary schools were coming together. And one of my best friends, I remember I end up seeing him, and it wasn't just that I saw him, it's that he made himself be seen, because he blocked me the entire time. So my parents were trying to record me, and every time they got like a little sliver of my face, he just moved in the way, because he kept like kind of swaying back and forth. And it was because everybody was supposed to categorize their kids, like all the teachers were supposed to categorize their kids, like up on the bleachers, from shortest to tallest, left to right. And his school was the only one that messed up. They did it from tallest to shortest, but they couldn't go in and fix it, or I guess they didn't want to. So either way, I remember this tape, and I remember years later, I told him about it, and I didn't know where it was. And sure enough, what do you believe? This is how these things go, right? It was like the last cassette that I found. And I remember when I found it, I took a photo of it, I sent it to him, and he's like, wait, is that the tape? I said, that's the tape, man, that's the tape. I gotta digitize this thing. Wouldn't you know, when I go home, right? I go home, I get my stuff set up, the DVD recorder doesn't work. could I have fixed it? Yes, probably, if I really dedicated to trying to fix it. Did I do that? No, because I was getting a little bit frustrated with it, admittedly. There wasn't too much documentation on it. And it just, when I would plug it in, I could hear power going to it, physically hear it, but I couldn't get any, like, none of the buttons responded. I could not turn this thing on. So then goes a whole other adventure in recording. I started looking around, and this is, again, this took years, right? So I had probably three tapes that were kicking around that I was like, okay, I need to digitize these, but I don't really want to spend that much more money on it. So I started looking around, you know, over years, I'm still going to thrift shops, and wouldn't you know it, if like a year or two later, I end up finding another DVD recorder. I think I paid maybe $14 for that as well. But I remember when I brought it home, my family was visiting at the time. My brothers actually wanted to check out some thrift shop. So we end up going. They end up finding some cool clothes. I found this DVD recorder. And I remember when I brought it in, my dad, he kind of just rolls his eyes. He's like, okay, you need another tech thing, really? And I'm like, no. Dad, this is different, right? So I explained DVD recorders to him. And I told him I had one and it broke and I can't use it and I don't really want to fix it. But I found this one right here. And it's, thankfully, it seems to be working. And when I described it to him, it's kind of like the gears started turning. And he's like, oh, that makes sense. And those things are kind of rare, aren't they? And I said, yeah, because everyone had a VCR, but nobody had a DVD recorder growing up. He's like, no, that's a really good idea. Like, yeah, you can't find those anymore. And they're kind of hard to find. And you said you paid $14 for it? Yeah, that's a good deal. And I said, yeah. And I have a project. I have three tapes I need to digitize. Three more left. And this will be done. However, if anybody, you know, any of my family wants things digitized, I'm still happy to do that. But there were three tapes I had in my collection that still were not digitized at that point. So, wouldn't you know it, though, I get everything hooked up, I start recording, everything is going swimmingly, right? But then I can't finalize the DVDs. And the problem is, just with a format of how DVD is and the structure of it, when you take that DVD, like that unfinalized DVD, you put it back in the DVD recorder, you can see all your footage there. You can see everything, you can record right back to it. But you take that DVD, you put it into a computer, it shows up as blank. You can't do anything there. So I started looking. I started to see if there was any way I could finalize it on the computer. It seemed like anything that I could do either didn't work or it was paid solutions. And I tried some free programs for that as well, but the free programs either just didn't work or they didn't do what I needed it to do. Even like trial programs, they didn't do what I needed them to do. There was one that looked really promising, and I tried it, and it still wasn't doing what exactly I needed it to do. So I just said at that point, and some people might be wondering, you know, why didn't you just finalize it on the DVD recorder? Here was the difference with this new one I got. My first one, it didn't come with a remote, but I was able to navigate all the menus on the buttons on the DVD recorder itself. This one, I couldn't. I could not do it. I tried. I could turn it on. I could play. I could record. I could go forward, backwards, but I could not get into any menu system on this. So therefore, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't finalize these discs, so I had like two or three DVDs I could not finalize. I'm like, this is an awful purgatory to be in. So I had an idea. I said, you know, my TV here that I got that probably people have seen in the background on my videos, you know, I use it for testing, but it didn't come with a remote. I said, you know what? I'm going to pick up a universal remote for this. And if it can mess with this DVD player, awesome. The universal remote ended up working for my TV. I couldn't find a single code that worked on this damn DVD recorder. Couldn't find anything. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I even did, like, you know, you cycle through all the codes. Couldn't do it. So then I start looking around, and I found a company, and I can't remember the company's name, but I found this company, and they made their own third-party remotes. And it seems like they took, like, just one big remote from what I see, and what they do is they then end up programming these remotes with certain ICs. Like, you know, if you need a remote for this DVD recorder, they would take an IC, they would burn the code that was needed onto that IC, and then they would stick it into the back of this remote. So suddenly this remote is now specifically working on that brand and that type of DVD recorder, which is exactly what happened. So I think it was like $22-25. And I said, you know, it's more than I want to spend, but here's the thing. I think there's like one more software that works, and I think it did. There was like one software I found that did work, but I would have had to pay like $45-50 for it to actually, you know, fully unlock and do everything. I said, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend like the $22-25 on this remote. If it works, awesome. If not, I'll spend the money on the software, but I'm trying to kind of go with the cheap options and then kind of start scaling upwards. So I went to this website. I ended up paying for the remote. Website looked like a new website that just wasn't really, or like a website that was forgotten about. So I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to get this damn remote. So at least worst case, if the remote doesn't come, I'm going to be able to charge back on my credit card. Sure enough, I got a shipping notification that it went out. I got the remote in the mail, plugged in batteries. Wouldn't you know it? Oh my God, I hit the menu button. The menu popped up. I couldn't do it fast enough. I hit that menu button. I put in a DVD. I finalized the DVDs. I ripped the DVDs over to my computer. I was done. Beautiful. So now I have a perfectly working setup. I got the VCR. It's working. I got the VHS cleaner. I got all the cables. I got the DVD recorder. I got a remote for it. I got the VHS-C to full-size VHS adapters. I got all that stuff. If friends need VHS or VHS-C tapes digitized, I got them at this point. That's kind of how I felt afterwards. Like, just like a nice sigh of relief of like, I did that. That project is done. And there's been a few times, you know, like I've copied the home movies over for families on like drives and stuff, and I've shown them. We've gone through some of them. And it's just so cool. What's made it so worth it is, one, knowing that all those memories are preserved and they're backed up and they're still accessible. And two, seeing their reactions, like when, you know, when some family members, when they were super, super young, when they were babies, when they were small kids, or even when they were just much younger adults and seeing them in these videos, it's awesome. It's absolutely priceless. And that's why I went through so much effort doing all of that, because I was like, you know, not only I enjoy doing this, but, you know, just having this on hand. Because I'm not sure. Also, I mean, with that as well, too, if we're talking like monetary stuff, I know you can save a whole lot doing it yourself that way, because even we're going to remove time from this, right? When I put everything in, let's round up, you know, even including the DVDs, because blank DVDs, not worth that much these days. Let's say it was like $60 overall into like hardware that I had to buy and extra things I had to buy. Like, thankfully, you know, and I'm even talking about like the DVDs that I went through, because DVDs, I was getting like a stack of like 80 of them for like $3 at a thrift store. You know, the DVD recorder, the second DVD recorder, the remote, easily within $60, right? I'm just looking this up here. I just want to see how much like it is to here. Legacy Box, for example, converts VHS to digital service. So for someone to do that, oh my God. Oh my God. I'm not sponsored with them or anything. I'm over at legacybox.com. And granted, they might be able to, you know, I'm sure they would do it better than me. But you can pay for this. So if I was wanting to get one, you know, you go here and let's say we're doing, they do items. So they do like a tape or a reel or photos. But let's say we want to do VHS tapes. Right now they're having a 50% off sale, right? And I don't know if they do this all the time. They're doing a 50% off sale. 2 items, $30. 10 items, $140. 20 items, $280. 40 items, $550. Now, you do get, you get them back through the cloud, and you can choose either a one-time download, or you can choose to get unlimited downloads and a 90-day secure backup. Each of those adds $80, or you can get them on a thumb drive for $80, or you can get them on a disc set for $80. So the point is, you know, I easily did over 40 tapes right there. Geez, even with everything discounted, that would have cost me like $800 to pay someone else to do it. So, you know, I got to hit up my family and be like, y'all owe me a few nice dinners or something. Man, maybe I should show them this and be all like, hey, you know, all those tapes that we got digitized, that, you know, we have those things like, you know, just preserved for life. Look at this. Like, oh man, I didn't know it was that expensive. I was thinking it was like, yeah, actually it's even less than I was thinking it was like $20 a tape or something, but you know, you, when you scale it up, yeah, that makes sense. So real cool. Either way, you know, those are the topics that we're going to be hitting on this time around. I did want to talk about the games that I'm currently playing here, which, I did want to say, big one. I finally finished, you all. I finished Persona 5 Royal. Wouldn't you believe it? I finished Persona 5 Royal. That was a fantastic game. Now, unfortunately, I didn't really fully take advantage of the Royal thing. Apparently, one of the big differences with Royal is that there is a third semester, and I did not play through the third semester because I didn't know until I finished the game. There are like one or two characters that you really have to level up your stats with on there, and I didn't fully level them up. I did get the good ending, though. But apparently there's like bad endings, there's the good ending. I did work to make sure I got the full, the good ending, which from speaking with people, they've also told me, you know, I like the good ending better than the true ending. But to get the true ending, I would recommend, if you're really one to take advantage of Royal, look into a guide for it. Just like look up true ending guide, just so you know what to do. Because if you're like me, you're going to miss it. You're going to miss the things that you need to do. And the problem is, it's not just like you can load up a save and change one option and go back. Like, no, these are whole like character arcs and things that you have to go through. And it takes hours and hours to build up getting to that point. So yeah, that's what I would say on that. Overall, great game. I played it on Switch. I enjoyed it. I will say one of my friends ended up asking me, how's it play on Switch? How's it look? I said, it plays pretty damn well on Switch. I think it plays at 30 frames. Yeah, it was 30 frames per second, mind you. The thing is, it doesn't look super good. Just even when playing it, even in portable mode, you'll look at it and you're just like, wow, I would have expected this to look a little better on the Switch, but it's a little too pixelated. But either way, it's stable. It works well. I never had any crashes. I have moved on, though, to Persona 5 Strikers, which, I'll be honest, I'm liking, but I'm not loving it. And it's probably my own fault on here, because the thing is, I like games that, I liked Persona 5 Royal, how it could be intense at times, so for the most part, you're kind of just going through a life simulator, you're just chilling, you can kind of just relax and play the game for the most part, play through a lot of it, it's a very cozy game. Persona 5 Strikers is not that. You have to do a lot more thinking. There's also a lot less interpersonal connections and such that are happening on there. There's a lot less of the dramatic story stuff that's happening in the slow burn. It's a lot more action-based. So that's the only thing. It's much heavier on the gameplay and less so on the social connections. So that's what I've been playing. The two games, you know, I finished up Royal. I'm playing Strikers right now. And also, I'm still having my fun and playing through and enjoying Ring Fit Adventure. Now, I guess I'm doing New Game Plus. Pretty much I finished the game 3 times. So now I'm just going way back to the beginning. Still on the same accounts, I'm fully leveled up and all that. So the nice thing is it's a lot easier, and I'm just going through a lot of it, but it's still making me work, it's still making me sweat. Also on the side, I've been playing Saints Row the Third with some friends whenever we play online. And I've also been playing Mario Party Superstars whenever there's a few of us online. So that's how we've been playing as well too. Or that's what we have been playing. So yeah, that's about it for the games that I could think of on here. You know, I think we got this here. I'll see what I can do in regards to the audio on this. If I sounded like a little bit distracted at times, I apologize. Like I said, in the middle of recording this, there was just like all this work that was going on outside. So you're hearing like mowers, weed whackers, all that stuff. So I'll see what I can do to clean it up. Hopefully it's something that I'm just complaining about and you all are kind of just laughing about and not really hearing. But either way, in regards to this here, I think we're at the end of this episode. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. I do like to wrap these episodes up with a keyword or key phrase. So if you have made it to the very end of this episode, congratulations. Thank you for hanging out. I really do appreciate you, your time. I appreciate your ears listening to this as well, and maybe your eyeballs if you are checking out the visual on this. However, if you have made it to the end here, let's go ahead and use the... Let's go ahead and use the word button. How about that? If you use the word button, I'm going to know that you've made it to the end of this episode. And go ahead and comment it on one of the video uploads using the word button. Do you like clacky buttons? Do you like quiet buttons? Do you love or hate button-up shirts? Let me know. If you use the word button in your comment on the upload here, or the video upload, I'll know that you've made it to the end of this episode. Anyways, that is about it for this episode of Mario's Minute. Thank you all very much for listening and watching. If you enjoyed this episode, a like would absolutely be appreciated. If you didn't like it, a dislike is fine as well, too. But as I always say, this is Mr. Mario, signing off. Thank you all for listening and watching, everyone. And until next month.